Aaltoviulun monet kasvot.
Aaltoviulun monet kasvot podcast, or should I say the multifaceted viola, or viola with many faces, or how should it be pronounced? Max Savikangas, my partner in crime.
Hello, hello, maybe the hero with a thousand faces.
A hero sounds great.
Oh, what do you think?
Janko, what do I think? Well, the viola is being cast in many different roles. I mean, kind of the hero role isn't the most usual one, but...
Yeah, that's probably, yes. Not the most common one for viola. As you might have noticed, we have changed our language to Oxford for this episode, because we are talking about the international side of things. And our honored guest for the day is current solo viola player of the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra, Jakob Dingstad. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Great to have you here. How's life?
Good, thank you. Sun is shining and we're going on tour with my orchestra tomorrow, first to Tampere and then to London to play in the Royal Albert Hall, the Proms. Yeah, so very much looking forward to that.
All right. How's the program?
Well, the program is, I think it's kind of a good compromise of like being a Finnish orchestra traveling with an English conductor to England.
Oh so yeah, you have an English conductor nowadays.
Yes, exactly. It's of course we play some Sibelius, Fifth Symphony.
They surprise, were
doing,
surprise.
Yeah, and they were doing a piece by Thomas Addis, a Märchentänze, for with our brilliant soloist Pekka Kuusisto.
Yeah.
Amongst others, yeah. So both British and Finnish music, and some French music as well. So some La Mer, some Debussy as well.
Do you, Max, have any encounters with Thomas Addis's music?
As a listener, yes. I haven't had the pleasure of playing any yet. But we'll see. I'm open to the idea.
It has been played for many occasions now, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. In Finland for like last 3, 4, 5 years.
Especially him being the guest composer of the Finnish Radio Symphony.
Well,
just recently.
Yeah.
So many concerts here in Finland.
Yeah.
And him conducting his own music.
Yeah.
And playing as a pianist in chamber context too. So his music and his musicianship has been quite widely presented here recently.
Yeah, I think he's the foreign composer that I've played the most from a Finnish point of view, actually, here in the Finnish radio.
Yeah.
And I recently heard my former teacher, Lars-Anders Tomter, perform one of his pieces in Tokyo.
Ah, okay.
Right. Yeah. Of course, I don't remember the name right now, but... multiple movements for viola and piano. Really beautiful piece.
For viola and piano.
Yes.
Nice.
Very, so we have to write it down.
Very, very peaceful music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit surprisingly.
Exactly.
In comparison to his, so to speak, common language of music.
Yeah.
Tends to be quite vivid and colorful and and strong.
Yeah.
I have met Lars-Anders Tomter once. A great person, both physically and mentally. And you were his student.
Am I
correct?
Actually, we are both his students.
Yes,
you're both his students. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I should shut up now.
But I was only for 1 year exchange student. But I think you have been.
Well,
there.
I kind of spent 6 years with him officially, maybe a bit longer even. But
So in Oslo, was he teaching also in Baradue Institute or only in
No, I had him at Norges Musikhøgskole, so the Norwegian Academy of Music.
Yeah.
Yeah, where I did my bachelor's and my master's degree. Yeah, within.
So, what about your studies, the early studies in well, Norway? How did you discover the joys of the viola?
Well, maybe my siblings or parents discovered the viola before me, because I don't really remember why I was set to play the viola. I have very supporting, loving parents who have always let me do what I want. But when it comes to the viola, I was slightly led to it because I have a sister who plays the violin and a brother who's a cellist. So kind of the viola was left.
Yeah.
And my piano teacher recently told me that I might have said something like, well, I guess that's the only instrument that was left for me. I don't remember myself saying that, but it was a natural choice. I mean, I started enjoying playing a lot more after switching to the viola because I was alone in my section in the orchestra. And then I understood what to do.
Yeah.
I thought it was so difficult to copy the bow movements of the person in front of me when I was playing the violin. So I got some relief of being alone. Right. Yeah.
So you had to figure it out by yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. In the middle of the orchestra.
Yeah.
So you have played the piano. Am I correct?
Well, I shouldn't have mentioned because I'm not a very multifaceted pianist, but it got me going with music theory. Let's say that.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of where it stayed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's always useful to have a little knowledge of piano.
Yeah, so. My father's a pianist, so I think I had my expectations a little bit too high too early. So
That's understandable, yeah.
And is your mother a musician as well?
She's a flute player.
Right.
So, flute teacher and music history and theory teacher.
You could play a beautiful quintet of flute, piano and string trio together.
Exactly.
You done that?
I don't think we have done it. We have done pieces without my mother. So we did all Brahms's piano quartets together for my father's 60th birthday. So then we did all three, A major, C minor, G minor, together. And I think it took about 3 hours, but I mean, it was a great experience.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So, coming from a musical family, I guess that playing chamber music must be like in your DNA. Could you say it's a strong part of your musicianship?
It's a very strong part of my musicianship. This sounds so pretentious, but
you're very serious here.
Yes, We're kind of entering a very, very important theme right now. Actually at home it was quite quiet. Usually we would play with our father, like respectively, to run our pieces and enjoy that. But we haven't really played that much together in the family. But I definitely started to enjoy music, like really enjoy music and actually considering it as my career once I got going with a string quartet and so on. So that's definitely where I found my voice. No, that's also pretentious to say, but yeah.
Well, we are on that road.
Yes, so. Yes. But it kind of set the direction.
Yeah.
So about your own voice, can I ask how do you feel? What is your ideal viola sound? Of course, there are many, many kinds of sides to one's idea, but could you somehow describe your ideal of your inner viola ideal sound?
Well, I actually, this is a difficult topic. I think I use my ears more when I listen to other people. As a player myself, I'm a little bit, and that's also my challenge, is that I get, I'm really interested in what I'm doing. And kind of, I want the result to sound good. But it's I have to remind myself to listen. And for me, the sound of the viola, it's the flexibility that I like, that you can do everything, that you can be the tenor, you can be the bass. That's also what I enjoy about playing in orchestra as a viola player, is that you get to play every role. You get to play middle parts, you get to play bass parts, you get to double the melody, or you are the melody. Mm-hmm. Or you are the composer uses the viola in a funny way, because I mean you get to play so many characters. It's a very multifaceted
combine the different roles.
Exactly.
By the way, for the listeners, we are now at the Helsinki Music Center, now celebrating its 10th anniversary, I think. And this is the home of both Jakob's home orchestra, the Finnish Radio Symphony, but also the Finnish, the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra, and thirdly, the Sibelius Academy. So this is kind of the hardcore of Finnish classical music life, if I could say so. We are right here, right now, and you might hear sounds here at the cafe, the waiters cleaning up dishes, but the I hope it's just a nice sound landscape for our podcast.
Well, I actually came here for a concert back in when the house was brand new, and I was and playing. 12. Yeah, I was playing here with my quartet, and we were doing a cooperation project with some friends. A founding member of my quartet had moved to Finland, and then we did something. We played the like octet together and stuff, and then I came here for a concert, and little did I know that I 5 years later would work here. And I even listened to the other orchestra playing, not even my own orchestra, but
the Helsinki Philharmonic.
Exactly.
So could you briefly explain the differences in sound and playing style of these two orchestras, the Finnish Radio Symphony and the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra?
Well, mostly I've been told what to listen for, because even before I was able to make my own opinion, I was told that the Finnish radio plays more modern music, and that the Finnish radio has kind of a cooler, more clinical sound, kind of like rhythmically precise and kind of like made for playing stuff precisely, while the Helsinki Phil, that they have a kind of more like romantic like sound and approach to music, and I mean I can kind of see those aspects. I kind of feel like there's more room to like for maybe like individual playing in the Helsinki Phil. Okay, I need to be really careful now what I say.
No, this is pressure. A podcast.
No one listen to us.
Say whatever you like.
the both orchestras have their strengths, and what I think is really great with the Finnish radio is that it's so uniform as well. I mean, I've got so much response that the sound of the string section is so clean and clear and precise, and I think and then kind of the Helsinki Phil has a different freedom in approaching things sound-wise, and I mean it's a huge richness that we have two orchestras with such a different sound and approach.
Yeah, have you played in both?
I've played in both. Yeah, right. And what kind of hit me the most, or when I was playing in the Helsinki Phil, was that actually there was much more going on in the rehearsals, much more people whispering and like movements and everything. So
less discipline.
Less discipline.
Right. Yeah. It's been said that RSO is like a serious orchestra,
like an army, kind of executing
executors.
The ninja of classical. So is it still the style of the Finnish radio orchestra that you tend to play quite a lot without made vibrato? Maybe the sound lives a little bit, but the strings play, especially if you play chords or that kind of stuff, you use quite a little of vibrato. Is that true still?
That's kind of difficult to answer because I feel that we have lots of players who appreciate a clear, clean sound. We have many players coming from who play older music, and we also have players who concentrate a lot on newer music. Short answer, probably. I think the use of vibrato is very it's a conscious choice, more than something you just do.
Right.
And that's the feeling I have. But the enormous flexibility of the ensemble was what amazed me when I came here. I was so happy to be in an orchestra who was so happily playing everything modern and baroque and everything in between. I mean, and it's that was like a fantastic eye opener to me, like how open people were to all different kinds of music.
So, yeah, no attitude issues here.
Well, not really, because I was also so impressed when I came here that we were having these quite advanced programs and people showed up. I mean, the hall was full.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed of how interested people were and that people actually gave everything a chance. I mean, remember doing this amazing, huge Charles Ives symphony with multiple ensembles and multiple grand pianos and multiple conductors and everything. And I'm kind of having like a hard time imagining that this could have been done in the main concert series, I mean, in this way. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my first big experiences here that I really loved.
I would put the blame little on Avanti Orchestra.
Yeah.
Because both the audience and the players are kind of educated in that way. And also Korvat Auki and ensembles like that. That you can take modern or contemporary music, like, how to say, seriously, but not serious. I don't mean like really, really seriously, but I mean you don't laugh at it. If you ask to scratch the instrument or do something which at the first prima vista sight reading would feel stupid or something or funny, but people are educated in that way that you just do what's printed in the score and it will turn out fine.
Yeah.
So that if
that depends of the composer.
Quality
of the music. Still,
of course, but in good contemporary music. I mean, if
okay.
If a conductor.
This
comes
is becoming interesting. Can you now tell me what is good contemporary music?
No, we are not driving that road today.
But I think it's a really good thing to actually give the score a chance before judging it.
Yes,
and that
exactly.
It's a fantastic trait to be able to just read the music and play it like it is.
Yeah.
Give it a chance and then see
that's
how
the,
it works.
That's the best tactics. If you just play it and if it's crap, then it's gone.
Yeah.
If it's not crap, then you did your job in a way.
Yeah.
And it's easier to do your job than not do
your
job.
I had a great pleasure of having my orchestra piece Whisked Whistle premiered by the Finnish Radio Symphony. And there I utilized a lot of extended string playing techniques. And I asked for a demo session before I actually started to compose with the strings. And that was really useful, and they were really open and willing to try everything. So I could hear what I've never before heard, but I imagined this should be cool. Some of it was, which I then used in the piece, some of it wasn't working very well, or as well as I had imagined. I remember the concert master Jari Valo said to me, I had my viola with me, but this technique, you cannot really play in rhythm with this. So I had to take my viola, but sir, look, it was the circular bowing stuff, and I demoed how you can play the rhythms, and then they were like, okay, and then they did it.
Yeah.
So
So
that's the best part of.
So I had a wonderful experience with the Finnish radio.
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
Yeah. You weren't here yet in 12.
No.
Yeah. I would remember.
So would you?
Yes.
Kind of our topic of the day is how the Finnish work life is different, or is it different than in other countries, perhaps? And sometimes it's easier to see from the point of view of someone who has played in many countries, in many orchestras, and does have an insight of what is done in other countries. So would you say this is a special, this is special for the Finnish orchestras, this kind of diving in things?
I think that's a general like a thing in Finland, that people have quite good attitudes when it comes to trying stuff, just like you're saying. And then I feel in a bigger perspective, I think there is a kind of a Nordic orchestral tradition, kind of like, because I, as a Norwegian, I don't feel very foreign here when it comes to
style,
how like style of playing, style of doing things, style of like how you communicate, kind of that. The structure of the orchestra is quite flat in a way. I mean, you can ask about things, and
but the hierarchy is still there.
It's still there, and I mean, it's a bit stronger in Finland than in Norway, I would say. So people are very respectful of the roles in the orchestra, but there's still that doesn't seem to challenge their curiosity or want to express themselves. But that's kind of the challenge of an orchestra in modern society, is that we are kind of keeping these structures alive, and we cherish them and we loathe them at the same time. So kind of the role as an orchestra, are we a museum, or are we like a living institution which creates art right now? And that's kind of, I think that's a very interesting place to be.
And it's in constant transformation in a way.
Exactly, yeah.
And museum is on the other hand.
Yeah, because people want the museum as well.
Yes.
I think it should be there, but we shouldn't like only be a museum. I think that's dangerous.
That's the death road, I suppose. If we want symphony orchestra to exist in 150 years, that's my prediction. I might be wrong. I mean,
on the other hand,
if you compare it to Indian music, they have had the same kind of music for 3,000 years.
Yeah. But then there's these orchestras in the world, like Vienna Phil or Berlin Philharmonic, which are more like traditional in that sense. At least Vienna.
Yeah.
I don't know if Vienna Philharmonic performs Ives' symphonies.
Probably not.
But, yeah.
So Jakob, your history in symphony orchestras, could you briefly go through, where have you played?
Well, in back in Oslo, I played a lot in the Norwegian opera, in the orchestra there. So actually my background was mainly operatic. So I played through lots of repertoire there, doing some subbing in other orchestras, but like really mainly playing opera. And then I did some auditions, which then they took me to Finland. And actually my kind of first professional experience with symphonic playing was in Finland, actually. So actually my background was very operatic, and also my attitude towards playing, kind of, as that you have the feeling of that if you are a worker or an artist, and I think that's a very interesting exchange, because when you're playing Traviata number 15, you kind of start thinking about these things. I mean, am I a person executing something concrete that I can repeat every night, or am I exploring something new? And I really enjoy also like being a proper worker sometimes. I mean, delivering the 20th nutcracker. There's something really beautiful about that as well. So and also combining the spirit with the curiosity that I've met so much in this orchestra, and the want to play new music, and because then you can be you can construct something new every week, but that you bring the attitude of being a handyman into being in like into artistry, I think that's a really rewarding.
I know exactly what you mean.
That's
the same thing I love about playing in opera orchestra. Sometimes it's hard to explain, but it's quite soothing.
Yes.
You don't, in some nights you can just do your job.
Yeah.
So and you played Valkyrie last night.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
I would be run over by a lawnmower or a small car.
Right.
Not like a truck, but Fiat Punto style.
Okay.
Because I also know I can't be like crushed, because I have to do it 5-6 times more.
You can do it.
I have to do it.
But some wise teacher I talked to some time back when I was studying, he compared playing in an opera like driving on a small mountain road. You need to be careful with obstacles, and you drive slowly.
Yeah.
So you don't put as many kilometers behind you as you would on the highway. But on the other hand, when you play in a symphony orchestra, you're driving on a highway, and you're passing lots more stuff. But the road is a little bit wider, and you go faster. You need to learn more repertoire, and it flies by.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, accidents happen on highways too. So
yes,
you need to be careful.
So here in Finland, in the Finnish radio and Helsinki Phil, what other orchestra have you visited after immigrating to Finland? Or has it been mostly these two?
I've been playing in the Lahti Symphony Orchestra, Tapiola Sinfonietta. I've visited in Oulu, and at the Savonlinna Opera Festival, I've led the section a couple of times. Helsinki Phil was mentioned. And then I visited the Avanti Orchestra as well, which was mentioned earlier. It's kind of the pioneers of modern music.
Quite many Finnish top orchestras and ensembles.
Yeah, I would say quite broad perspective.
What about internationally? Have you visited any international symphony orchestras yet?
Well, I was asked to lead in the Australian Chamber Orchestra.
Right.
And that was a fantastic experience back in 2019, where you could the time where you could do everything and travel the world. And
is that where the cellist Timo Pekka Valve is working?
Exactly.
Right. Yes. Australian Chamber Orchestra.
So somehow through Finnish connections, I was brought there to play, and I was really thrilled to be there. I mean, get to experience Australia and really lovely colleagues there. And I had heard so many good things about the orchestra before from people who had visited, and then of course I have my experiences in Norway. I was briefly played in the Swedish radio.
The general background story about Swedish orchestras is that everybody has to have their say, so having discussions about things. Is that correct?
Yeah, I hear that story very often in Finland, with, like how people think that how working in Sweden is. I mean, yes, some of it is true. People have a lot to say, and they want to talk about it. And I mean, it's also a cultural trait, I think. And also, I think also Norwegians maybe have a bigger need to be heard than Finnish people do. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah.
But still less talkative than the Swedes.
That's my impression, yeah. At least. Yeah.
Yeah. And
because I remember I had been here for maybe 2 years or something, and then the Norwegian violinist Vilde Frang was our soloist, and I know her from a long time ago. She's a good friend of my siblings, and I know her as well. And her first impression was that, yeah, really nice orchestra, but it's very serious. It's very serious.
They hate me. They must hate me.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's kind of also the kind of Norwegian stereotype of Finnish people, is that you say very little, and yeah. what you then end up saying is very wise.
Yeah. Well, this is again also a stereotype.
Mm. Yeah.
And not completely the truth about Finnish people, of course.
Not completely wrong either.
No, there's some usually truth. There's to
something,
as well.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, something in the stereotypes which are at least in the same direction that the truth.
I mean, Finland sold lots of movies to Norwegian television in the 70s, which have done enormous harm. Mm-hmm. On people's picture of Finland, there are lots of people alone in the forests with knives and guns behind saunas, and lots of darkness.
Yeah.
And I have had more than 5 people asking me about these movies and the connection to the reality in Finland. And,
right, all right. Must be Mikko Niskanen, the director, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
And later, of course, Aki Kaurismäki, but that's like from the 80s.
I actually recognized the stereotypes in Kaurismäki's films.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
quite strong.
Mm-hmm. And you recognize them here live in Common People.
And I also recognize them in how people want me to see Finland, because I get told a lot what I should expect from Finland and Finns.
Right.
So I mean, Finns have this also this kind of loving relationship to the stereotypes about you.
Right.
So people can maybe look at them kind of slightly like loathing them, but still there's still lots of love in there.
kind of cherishing the stereotype in a way.
Exactly. And
with the love-hate relationship with a splint of pride.
Like it's bad, but it's ours.
Yeah.
That's what we are.
Right. can you hear, just by listening to a recording, the difference between, let's say, the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra and the Oslo National, the Norwegian National Symphony and the Danish Radio Symphony Orchestra and, let's say, the Royal something in Sweden?
I can't. I cannot distinguish different nationalities from orchestras anymore. I had these discussions with a relative once about maybe that this was maybe easier before, because I mean, music life is more international now than before. Sounds move. Across borders. I mean, people listen to each other more. It's possible to imitate, and of course you're affected by stuff you hear.
Yes.
And now we have the whole world available online, so I think without us really knowing it, we get affected by everything we hear. And certain ideals spread easier.
Yes.
I'm not advocating for kind of a nationalist view of playing, but I mean, of course, something gets. I mean, it's something might get lost as well, because people start copying each other. But I mean, there's lots of good art that started with a good copy. And I mean, so I think in the end we're all good, but I think that has maybe affected.
Yeah,
kind of that national sound of an orchestra. But I just remember when traveling to Europe with my quartet and having lessons in Vienna in Italy, that they thought that our sound was quite edgy and hard. Mm-hmm. So we were often asked to kind of like soften the edges a little bit, and I've heard that a few other times as well, that Nordic orchestras go on tour and the roof of the hall lifts off, because I mean there's so much. It's loud and it's edgy and but I mean I don't know whether this is true or not, but at least that's a comment that I've experienced.
Yeah. Well, about copying, maybe imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Goes.
But I remember as a student playing in the Sibelius Academy Symphony Orchestra, the conductor Atso Almila was rehearsing us. It was something like maybe even Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. Mm. And he said something, and then I was like, yes, but in this and this recording, they played like this and this. And he was like, don't copy. Don't listen to these recordings. We are making our own interpretation, and stop copying.
Mm. Well, while studying, I followed the same principle when I had time, when I wanted to, and when I had time to really dive into a piece which I wanted to make my own. So, for example, I didn't listen to a single recording of Bartok or Walton for a very long time, because I was afraid of copying someone else's manners, because I knew that this piece would be with me for a long time.
Mm.
So same applies for Stamitz and Hofmeister. I also try to stay away from recordings because I was afraid of becoming someone else in a way.
Becoming affected.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, because you start, I mean, if there are things you like.
Infected.
Mean, yeah, then you're infected and then you start taking over. Yeah. But I mean, it's give and take. And some other times when you need to learn a piece quickly, it's really helpful to listen, or if you need inspiration. I think right. But I mean, it's something you can choose to do or not to do. That's the...
Yeah.
That's my mantra with that. But,
so don't copy too much.
Well, copy with taste.
Copy with taste.
Yeah.
Copy after you have managed to create your own thinking.
About the so-called oral tradition in classical music could be seen as copying. You play like this and this. This type of passage is typically played this and this. And as we discussed with Markus Sarantola about these old playing styles and how to play hip nowadays, historically informed performance, which the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra might be coming close to, I think, nowadays.
Yeah.
Mm. People actually have read these books and have listened to hip recordings and are aware of these questions, not just playing as they feel individually. So in a way it's copying, but other way of expressing it is that it's a style.
Yeah.
How about these standard concertos? Which of them have you had a chance to play as a soloist with an orchestra?
I have played some of the Walton Concerto with a German orchestra once when I did a course. But I haven't played Bartok.
Right.
With an orchestra. No, I haven't. I did the Sinfonia Concertante with my own orchestra when I joined.
Nice.
And next year I will do Britten's Lacrimae with the orchestra, which has this hilarious detail in the score that Britten wishes that only the second violins play, so that the first violins shouldn't take part.
Right.
And I mean, it's like offensive to both. in a funny way, but I mean,
he
doesn't want the violin to be too prominent.
So yes.
So therefore, the second violin should stay.
Sometimes composers have left the violins out completely.
Yeah.
Perhaps the most famous is the Forre Requiem, where
exactly,
there
yeah.
are no violins at all, and the violas omit the role of the leading string instrument in the orchestra.
And another composer who when I discovered the first, I had a very intensive Philip Glass phase,
uh-huh.
where I would listen to everything by him, and then I went with a couple of friends to a live screening of Kojani's Gatsi,
right.
which is this cult movie where
yes.
basically the Philip Glass ensemble with Philip Glass in it was performing the movie score with a Bergen Philharmonic, and then to my great delight I saw that there was a viola player sitting on the concertmaster seat.
Right, and with a film projection.
Yeah.
So live music to a film, projected film.
Exactly.
Right.
And I mean, to convey the right mood, he took away the violins. And I mean, one of the main parts is sung by a bass soloist, and it has this kind of dark flavor,
yeah. mm.
whole film score. And that's one of the scores that made him famous. He made
yeah.
him into the, I guess he's the richest composer alive today or something of the classical mm. composers.
I have no idea.
No.
I think he's doing quite well.
He's still writing, so.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. By the way, I have played the Madrigal Opera, the premiere recording with Helsinki-based Opera Scala.
Oh.
There's mm-hmm. a huge viola solo. I think the third movement.
Mm-hmm.
About being driven over by a lawnmower or a Fiat Punto. I know what you talk about, the small muscles in the left hand after that stuff.
Well,
wow.
I'm still, I played in a production of Philip Glass's In the Penal Colony, based on a short story by Franz Kafka.
Right.
So like a chamber opera of his, and I loved every minute. I still like Philip Glass's music. I don't like everything he writes, but mm. most of it. And that was kind of one of my ways into actually playing music professionally, was just this phase I had with the Philip Glass string quartets.
Right.
And then found a group of friends, and then we started doing them first before we did anything else.
Okay. How do you find cool. Philip Glass's violin concerto?
I really like it.
Yes.
That's one of the concertos I've listened to the most. Yeah. So that's like a dream I have, that it would someday be in our repertoire. But I mean, that's minimalism isn't very kind of accepted or wanted here. That's kind of a difficult genre.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's considered too commercial, too popular,
yeah.
too pop somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Too easy.
Yes. And especially earlier, I think that was the case in Finland.
Yeah.
In the 80s, where modernism was the kind of style most appreciated. Actually, modernism isn't any style. I cannot actually explain what it is. Maybe it's more an attitude than any particular style. But anyhow, minimalism wasn't considered as part of serious art music back then, and maybe it still has some resonance in the modern nowadays culture in 22 in Finland, I suppose.
That's kind of part of Finnishness, that it shouldn't be too easy. You need some you need something to put your thoughts in. You need something.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you actually
yeah.
like it.
Yeah.
There must be something suspicious about it. You know, I've heard this, that the composers themselves have this joke that contemporary music is great. The problem is that nobody likes it. Well, of course, that is also only partly true. I personally can admit that I actually like a lot of contemporary music. Sometimes Philip Glass included, I think. His music has artistic value. I also like Steve Reich.
I love Steve Reich. I actually got the chance to meet him once.
Really?
I attended, my sister was then playing in the Royal Philharmonic in Stockholm, and they had this Composers Festival, and he was handed an award. And then there was this after party, and then I was lucky to be invited inside, and then I went straight to him and asked him about the viola part in the string quartet, different trains.
And then I have heard this live. Yeah. It has some kind of film to it, or was it just that performance?
I think it's often done with a film. It's not. Right. It's not actually. It's not. It's not from the composer.
It doesn't actually belong to the piece. Okay.
But I mean, it's it deals with being Jewish during the Second World War. I mean, in Europe and in America, and you have all these voices that these voice samples, which are musical elements in the piece, and the viola has like very many, like the vocal qualities of the viola are very showing, because you double voice samples all the time.
So what are the vocal qualities of the viola?
The vocal qualities of the viola, I mean, there is this nice video with Jennifer Stumm, I don't know, how do you pronounce her name? Where she
Jennifer?
Talks... Jennifer. Jennifer. I remember I needed some inspiration for a text I needed to write, and then I found her lesson, like some TED talk or something, I don't remember, but then she kind of talked about how vulnerable the viola is, that you have the same, I mean, you would hear this from a cellist as well, who also say that their instrument is the closest to the human voice, but I mean, the viola has this quality that it might break. I mean, it's slightly dangerous. I mean, you're kind of on edge all the time, and you try your best to carry, and then sometimes it might break, and I mean, and you have this really, really emotional quality.
To cherish it.
Exactly.
Well, French horn player might have a say about that also.
Yeah.
Or every other instrument.
And then the floor is really wet afterwards. And
Like with viola sometimes.
Or violist.
Or violist.
But the viola is imperfect, hence humane. By the way, I am going to perform Steve Reich's Viola Phase.
Wow!
In 10th of September.
Is it the violin phase?
It's the violin phase, a fifth lower.
Oh, lovely!
So, pre-recording tracks and playing on top of those tracks.
Nice.
Haven't still recorded those tracks, but will be recording.
Well, enjoy.
Yeah.
I was actually supposed to make my professional violin debut, playing maybe like fourth violin in that piece.
Really?
But then
a live performance.
Yeah, okay. But then I luckily got a flu the week before, so I didn't get to play. So the
so
world
you
didn't
have
get to experience
the violin before you started to play the viola.
I played the violin very early on. I started playing the violin when I was 5, and then I switched to the viola when I was 9.
Right.
Yeah.
Quite early.
Yes.
With a slight push from your parents.
With a very, very gentle, loving push. Yes.
Yeah. And you're still on it. No plans of changing back to violin or any other instrument.
There's no danger of me doing that. Absolutely no danger.
Just hypothetically, would you be playing some other instrument? What instrument would that be? Have you ever thought?
Well, I think in the classical world, I think kind of the role-wise, I would be interested in playing the bass or like double bass or playing the bassoon or something, an instrument which also has different roles.
So no lead guitar.
Well, in a jazz rock setting, I would probably like to play drums or bass.
Right.
I mean, something which provides framework somehow. I'm not a lead guitar type.
Have you played any jazz, rock, or hip hop, or any kind of that so-called popular music?
So-called popular music. Well, in what should I call it? In high school, I did quite a few projects across genres, and that was a very rich, important time for me, actually, to play with jazz friends, rock friends, and trying at least to experience something else. I mean, it was
on the viola,
on the viola,
yes.
Yeah,
mic'd.
I mean, yeah, mic'd, or then I have this Yamaha silent viola instrument, electric viola.
Is it a five-string instrument?
It's a four-string instrument.
Four-string viola.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And it's useful when you have to practice in, yeah, silently or.
So you use it for just keeping in shape.
I mean, yeah, for learning apartment. Learning pieces when traveling, and I mean it's very useful. Yeah.
So you plug in earphones and then you hear something, or
exactly.
Is it just right?
Well, you still hear something, but I mean it's very little, and then you can also connect it to an amplifier, of course, if you want to have fun.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And so
distortion.
Exactly.
And wah wah.
Yeah. Loop pedals and everything.
Pedals are highly popular nowadays. Mm-hmm. Have you tried those?
I haven't actually, but I really want to.
Should be available in the next music store for a decent price. I have no idea what they cost, but they're different types, of course.
Yeah.
Pekka Kuusisto, the violin player, has played around with loops quite a long time. I've witnessed his virtuosity on not only the violin but stomping on the loop pedal too.
Also, Finnish viola player Hanna Hohti, who is performing in Helsinki Festival.
Yes. When is that?
I don't remember. It can be found through internet, but I think she commissioned quite a few pieces, new pieces, for viola and electronics.
Yeah, cool.
We should check that. We should actually invite her as a guest to our podcast about this program.
Yes, we
should. It's quite rare in Finland, at least,
yeah,
that somebody does this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I would like to see it much more.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of playing with Hanna last year. We did something very classical together, but I mean, she did a contemporary piece before our piece, and really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Nice.
One thing I would love to ask from our guest Jakob Dingstad. Still, we have a national viola competition coming up in just a few weeks. And you have done your fair share of auditions and competitions and been very, very successful in those occasions. At least you were in Tokyo viola competition not long ago, I guess.
Yeah, I thought that it would be nice to have a goal for for practicing, and I just sent a tape along to the Tokyo International Viola Competition, and suddenly in January I got an invitation to play in the live rounds, and as always, it was a surprise. I was really, really happy, and then I had my work cut out for the spring.
Yeah.
Well, if I remember right, there were nine pieces in addition to the live recording that was done last year, which included a whole Reger suite by choice and some Bach movements to be sent unedited for the pre-round, yes. And so then I spent this work week when I would play in the mornings, would play orchestra in the mornings, and then every night I would try and run the program through in front of a camera, and then go home, listen to it, write down what didn't work so well or what worked, play orchestra again, and then try again the next day. And then on Thursday I eventually gave up, and I kind of felt that I had reached my peak, and then I sent that to the competition.
Videotape.
videotape.
A video track.
Well,
or was it an actual tape, physical tape?
Well, it was a digital file.
Digital file.
Yes.
Uncut.
Not a mini.
Uncut. Yes.
So you had to prove that you have not been messing around with the file, anyhow, in any manner.
Well, I don't know how I would have proven it. Maybe I should have held a newspaper in front of it or something. A very clever thing that some people do is that they tell you to have a clock on the wall.
Ah,
right. So
that, yeah,
a moving arms of the clock will prove that it's a continuous performance.
That's really clever.
But that's one thing I sense a good preparation, because you were creating routines for yourself.
Yes.
So do you have any other clues for how to optimize your preparation process?
I mean, for me personally, I had this feeling of relief that you can actually achieve quite a lot when you just face a couple of things. That you actually listen to recordings of yourself, and that you kind of break the barrier of being able to listen to yourself. I still have issues doing that, but it saves you a lot of time. So basically recording yourself doing the stuff that you've been playing forever, it's really healthy if you want to achieve a certain result quickly. And also, speaking of results, I think it's also very important to be able to create boundaries for yourself, have a vision for what you would like to achieve. Because I think part of, then we again have the kind of border of, are we artists or are we people who recreate something? And I think also if you are expected to create a rendition of a piece, I mean, or an orchestral excerpt or something, I think it helps you a great deal if you are able to settle on a vision and aim for that. I mean, if your time is limited, because I've experienced so many people, including also myself, that you have this feeling of, well, this is impossible because everything is possible, and there are no rules. So you kind of need to set some rules for yourself in order to cope with it mentally. I mean, it's or else the playing field is so open that you feel a bit lost easily. And some people love being lost, but there are not so many of them. So I mean, if you're in a stressed situation, working, studying, and you need to achieve stuff, I mean, setting some boundaries and kind of living with them, and I mean, you can decide on doing things, and then you don't agree with yourself later.
Exactly.
But that you also accept that that's the thing. Your taste might change, but that you are brave enough to actually wanting to say something.
So we listened to your performance in Tokyo. You told us before we started recording that it was 10 o'clock in the morning in Tokyo. You made your live competition performance. And to our ear, it sounded just about perfect. It was fluent, vivid, in the style we now understand Bach should be more or less played, and errorless.
Well,
and it surprises me that you didn't go to the second round, and leads to the question, which I haven't yet found out: how did the other players play if you weren't accepted to the second round?
Well, the level was fantastic, and I was so happy to be invited even with so many nice people.
So actually, no, it's difficult to actually go through the video screening. It's a huge amount of tapes or video files being sent, and only so few get actually invited to the competition. So that by itself, having the chance to play live in the Tokyo competition is a merit by itself, I think.
Yeah, I was really, really, really happy to be invited. I mean, I was surprised. I've never had competition success, really. And I, during my studies, I also applied for different things. But this was the first time I really got invited to like a big competition with a tape.
One of the biggest.
Was, yeah, and I was, I mean, I had won already. I was so happy. And after exiting after the first round, then I still walked around and I was really happy with being there and having played and meeting so many nice people. And I mean, this sounds like a cliche, but I actually, I wasn't that sad, actually, I have to say, because I kind of, my attitude was that I'm really doing my best here, but I'll probably not win.
You stayed there. You stayed there after your performance.
Yes, I stayed
and listened to other competitors play.
I listened to a lot. Right. The greatest. There was one guy who, great guy, who told me that he had been living a very on a very strict regime for the last half year, being like a viola monk, and like having his whole life circling around performing in this competition, and to see, like, he was disappointed after not proceeding to the second round, and then he looked at me like, "You're so Scandi. I mean, you're so positive about everything, like, how?" But then, of course,
Scandi.
Yeah, that I was so Scandi of being so positive. But I mean, but of course, it's also like a mechanism, a coping mechanism, that if you know that you haven't done your best, it's not so bad that you don't proceed. And that's something that I have been had to cope with or work with, because it feels brutal if you have actually done your really, really, really best and it's not enough. And that's, but if you know that you kind of didn't maybe reach 100%, then you kind of, you could have, but you didn't. I mean, then the disappointment isn't maybe that harsh.
Yeah.
And that's something that I have maybe done sometimes when I've had big stuff coming up, is that I kind of, I didn't risk it maybe. Like going really all in. But like now I did, I was very, 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 very close to all in. And I dared, I dared to go there. It was 99%. I organized 4 recitals and pushed all my boundaries a lot and recorded myself. And I really did my best this time.
You became your own producer, artistic producer.
Exactly.
And how did you feel about your Bach performance at 10 o'clock in the morning in Tokyo? Were you happy about it afterwards?
It was me, good and bad. I mean, you know, you're playing in and out quite well during such a competition process. I'm not an experienced competition player, so this was a kind of a unique experience for me to actually play like a very certain, like a small amount of pieces a lot.
Yes.
And and then, of course, I had tested it in concerts. And I mean, I kind of could expect of what came out. And the morning was really, really humid. It rained a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So what actually disturbed me was that everything was sticky. And my bow felt wet. And I mean, it was...
The hair was loose.
Yeah, everything like was loose and sticky. And I mean, and that wasn't nice. I mean, and then I couldn't find bananas in Tokyo. And I couldn't find fruit. And I mean, so I ended up buying some cheap chocolate and eating that before going on stage. I mean, like, stuff like that. Because you fall back on your routines. And if I have a big thing coming up, I'll probably take a banana and a glass of water before going on stage.
Sorry of not offering you a banana. With just beer. Sorry.
This is probably not the hardest place you have been in, so maybe beer is good.
Well, yeah. Maybe
well,
beer
Tokyo
helps.
Was easy compared to...
So it was with a live audience, right?
It was with a live audience.
And the jury was there amongst the audience.
Yes, they were sitting in the back, scattered around.
It was more or less a concert situation.
Yes.
Right.
With a Japanese lady announcing all the participants in both Japanese and English.
Yeah.
And
respectfully.
Very respectfully, yes. And then we were asked to play the first movement of Schubert's Arpeggione. Sonata, and two Bach movements. Mm. In my case, the Prelude and the Saraband.
We heard the Schubert too. Mm-hmm. We heard both of them online. And I think it's still online, your performance. So anybody interested, go to Tokyo Viola Competition website and check out Jakob's playing.
I'm not going to tell you which number I had. Mm. Then you can go search for yourselves.
It's there. Your name is there. So.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it was at least we should check if it's still.
Yeah, but I mean the whole process around. I mean the competition was really, really well organized, and I know from other sources that Antoine Tamesti, who is artistic leader of the festival, he's a very structured and serious and sincere musician. He also wanted to create an arena for growing and for experiencing the viola, and also so this competition is connected to a festival, Viola Space.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so the competition is part of Viola Space, and included also like concerts with people from the jury playing. Mm-hmm. And the rounds were open to an audience.
Was the Viola Space Festival founded by Nobuko Imai?
Exactly, and she's still going
strong. She was there.
She was there. I mean, she played and in the jury, and fantastic lady.
Yes, I have met her once.
Yeah.
What a great personality.
Great. Yeah. Luckily, I had the chance to speak to all the jury members after the first round to get some feedback.
Okay.
And
that's great.
I mean, I'm actually that it was actually really valuable because you had very different players in the jury, so you got different feedback from everyone. I had the feeling that they couldn't agree that quickly on things because everything took time.
Yeah.
And they all have strong musical personalities, of course, these jury members. And then I met my former teacher Lars-Anders Tomter, who knows my Bach very well, and to kind of saw it in the perspective of how I've also played before and everything, and then the way that we had a discussion of development and like in the bigger picture what I'm doing now and what has happened in my life, and I mean it kind of developed into a personal conversation with but also I mean playing is personal, and it is linked to where you are in life and what you want to say, and I think when you have a person like me who has a job and limited amount of time of practicing solo repertoire, and so like my story will be different than the guy who was a viola monk for half a year and who can do that. And he will have something different to say. And I mean, the feedback that he got was also colored by that he went all in. He tried some quite extreme stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that I was kind of going the middle road, a little bit kind of how you would, like I would prepare for an audition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That you have this kind of mantra that be yourself, but be clever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That you have personality, but that is not kind of out of bounds.
You don't want to share the or disrupt the jury's views of yourself and your musicianship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Altoviulun monet kasvot.
Isn't Lars-Anders Tomter a jury member in the Oulu competition as well?
Yes, he is.
Next month.
Mm-hmm.
So he has high merit, both as a jury member, we can trust.
Yeah, I think he will have a tremendously good perspective of things, how viola should be played.
Yes.
But the best thing about Lars-Anders is how he teaches and sees things is that he sees the student as a person, like you said.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He wasn't, of course he's interested about the playing and how it goes, but immediately he starts to think where it's going and where it should end. And how you should be living your life as a person with the viola.
And my time studying with him was so rewarding because he gave me lots of space to work in. And that's also something that I will try to take with me when I start teaching more myself, is that you kind of, that you see the student and you acknowledge their strengths and their challenges, and that you can kind of help them find the way instead of telling them where to go. And that's an art, and that's also something I really admire with my current teacher, Hartmut Rode, in Berlin, who has this amazing ability to scale his teaching to all levels at any time. So I followed his teaching in Berlin, I followed his teaching in masterclasses, and that's kind of revived my interest also for solo playing. And then I decided, back in 2020, I decided that I wanted to study a little bit more.
Okay.
To refine my solo playing a bit and just explore a little bit more. And I was so taken by his ability to be present. And and I mean, at the masterclass he was teaching, the level between the players was very varying. They were all there because they wanted to play and because they loved playing, but I mean the technical level wasn't like different all the time.
Yes.
And but he took everyone so seriously, and and that was something that made an impression on me.
Do you find that Hartmut Rode, what's his name, the correct pronunciation? You can say it again, but anyhow, do you agree that he could be considered as a true viola virtuoso?
Yes.
I have a feeling that he can actually play everything.
Yes.
It's just amazing, live and on recording.
Yeah, he's likewise. I mean, he's kind of like you buy the reference recording from him for the concertos. And I mean he's a very active chamber and solo player in addition to teaching. I don't understand how he makes his schedule go like work, but I mean it's and it's really inspiring. Okay, now that also sounds pretentious again, but actually really inspiring to be with a guy that you know will play a concert tomorrow. Kind of it's you're really close to the real deal.
Yeah,
the core.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the core of what we do is to play for people.
Indeed.
We forget that sometimes. I at least do.
We all do at some point.
Yeah.
We play music for people.
Yeah.
One last question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? In 10 years' time?
I really don't know, because I didn't see myself in Finland 10 years ago. I'm probably going to be a better version of myself, doing my daily job and looking for challenges in music and other challenges also, that I have something other to do than just practicing my free time. I love learning languages. I love to explore, and I mean that's kind of been a challenge for me also to find a balance when you work in an orchestra, that you don't get completely stuck in practicing. Because again, I mean you can practice endlessly, and that also gave me a straining injury back when I was quite fresh in the orchestra.
Really?
I couldn't really find my limit. But I mean that's also an experience, and I've learned lots from that. And also kind of the way of looking at work and life, and kind of as a musician, you're always faced with the challenge of where to draw the line of work and play. I think I'll just continue my journey, and hopefully I'll be teaching a little bit more.
All and, work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Okay, I said that was the last thing, but I have to mention that now we made some content for our international fans. But we have to mention that Jakob speaks also fluent, nearly perfect Finnish. So the last word, could you say something in Finnish for the students who are now preparing their ass off for the Oulu competition.
Hei, tsemppiä siihen kilpailuun ja no, hyvää matkaa.
Enjoy the ride. Thank you so much, Jakob, for this. It has been a great, great honor.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Kiitos. Ja Aaltoviulu Monet kasvot jatkuu taas uusilla aiheilla. Moi moi.
Moikka.
Aaltoviulun monet kasvot.